writing comedy professionally for TV shows was fun because you always work with somebody. You know, sit down and goof off half the day and write half the day. And writing for my act is probably the hardest thing I have to face for the rest of my life because it's the most crucial, critical material, especially live material. It's a community effort. My manager will think up something and say something funny at a dinner table, and I'll say, hey, that's a good idea, or I'll say something spontaneously. Sometimes I'll just sit down and write something. Sometimes I'll work with a friend of mine because it's a little bit easier that way. But the pressure, it took me really 10 years to write 2 hours of material. And now that 2 hours is becoming exhausted. So now I have to come up with 2 hours of more material in 3 months.
Where did you pick up your writing habits? Was it from working in television?
That was a great experience. When you write a piece and look at it on TV, you learn how to cut out all the... You learn to cut it down, and keep cutting it and keep cutting. It's really the secret to my act, anyway, or a lot of comedy, is the cutting out every non-essential thing. And in one line, directing a person's mind toward the punchline. I'll work with phrases over and over, putting a phrase at the end of the sentence. I'm trying to think, I was working on something today, or was... Oh, yeah, it was a joke I was doing at Universal Amphitheater. The joke was, I just came in from Orange County, that's where I grew up, the suburban conservative area, where I received the award for the Honky of the Year. So that joke first started out, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking, I just returned from Orange County where I received the Honky of the Year award. But the word award on the end of it hurt it somehow. It was like a one beat too long. So I had to, and I kept shifting it in my mind, the award for, you know, the Honky of, but anyway, it came out, it seems simple now, but it wasn't at the time, to get the award for the Honky of the Year. I just came back from Orange County. I received the award down there for the Honky of the Year.
How do you have your quality control? That must be a really difficult thing because you have, particularly, you have such a strong audience. I mean, they just love everything you say.
Well, that's the hardest thing. People say, "Gee, they'll love anything you do," but that's not true. It's foolish to think that. I can't walk out there with lousy material or something that's sort of purposeless. They can smell it, I think. There's only one line in my whole act now that gets a laugh that I don't understand. And that is in the part where I say, I played football, I was a quarterback, and I quit because I had my own style of playing. I used to like to punt on first down. And then I say, so I became a cheerleader. And for some reason, that gets a laugh, where I say I became a cheerleader. And I don't understand, but I've been holding for it lately, because it gets a laugh, like, yeah, there's my... But that's really the only thing in the act that gets a laugh that shouldn't.
I was thinking about this just the other day. I was just sitting home doing terrible things to my dog with a fork. And I started thinking about when I was in high school. I had a real normal, kind of healthy high school. I was on the football team. I was a quarterback. And I quit after 2 weeks. And I'll tell you why. Because when I'm the quarterback, I think I should be calling the plays. I don't think the coach should be sending in the plays. I'm in charge out there, and that's the way I felt. And I had my own strategy. I used to like to punt on first down. So I quit that, became a cheerleader. And that was really fun. You know, I got my first experience standing up in front of people, and I got my first writing experience. I wrote cheers for the team. But the other cheerleaders were so jealous. They would not use one of my cheers. I wrote, "Die, you gravy-sucking pigs."
Do you ever worry about lack of new material, lack of communication with the audience?
I worry about everything constantly. I worry about material. I worry about not having enough records pressed when we need them. I worry about Steve getting sick, you know, or becoming unable to perform psychologically because the pressure is there. I mean, the schedule is over, is tight. His schedule is, if he weren't so healthy physically and mentally, he could break down under the schedule alone. Anyone would. It isn't like a regular job where you get off at a certain time. You're always on. I worry too much, I think. I mean, I've been told recently that I'm worrying too much.
Steve is a good friend of yours as well as being your client. How would you describe him?
It's changing. Started out, he was a good friend as well as a client. Now he's a star. And being that changes the relationship. It becomes more serious, you know, like the goals are more complicated. Maintaining that stature or improving it, creating a bigger career than we originally had ever considered. Now it's a worldwide, it has worldwide potential. When we began, we did it because it was funny, and it was better than working. It was fun. It's fun hanging out in nightclubs. It's fun recording. It's fun trying to get something on television. It's more fun seeing it on television. And now, because of television, the entire experience has turned into a way of life. I mean, we live and breathe his career. It's a continuous, all-consuming way of life based on the telephone, the performances, and the deals that have to be planned for future projects, which now include motion pictures.
Do you make the deals for him?
I have created a team of highly skilled professionals, which include myself. And in this business today, you're dealing with the brightest people in the world who are running the entertainment industry. And you have to have people who can communicate with them on their level. It's not a folksy business any longer, if it ever was. It's like brain surgery.
Can I ask you, in what ballpark does the Steve Martin career generate money?
Well, it's hard at this time because we're just entering into the period of collecting money that we've earned for the last few years out of record sales. Record sales are, as all rock groups that are in the top 10 have proven, the largest source of income in show business because you're making money while you're sleeping. And radio is a monster. In a way, it's bigger than anything, television or motion pictures, because it's immediate. In one day, you can create a hit record. It's complicated to pin down the figure. I mean, honestly, it can't. It would be unfair to guess. His career at this point is equal to the biggest comedians of our generation, Cosby or any other, from record sales. It's big. That's all I can tell you. It's great. We're happy.
I'm not sticking with the regular stuff tonight. You paid the money. You paid $4? $4.50?
Believe me, sometimes, hey, it's a good investment. Sometimes I come out here, I do $4.75 show. I might do a $5 show, so yeah. If you pay $4.50, I don't do a $4.25 show. I keep going. I do a $4.50 show, and that's it, baby. So you may make a little bread off this tonight. I'm into bread. I love money. I love everything about money. I love to eat it. Eat money. You say you can't take it with you? I'm taking it with me. I'm into bread. I love bread. I bought some pretty good stuff. Got me a $300 pair of socks. I got a fur sink. Oh, let's see, electric dog polisher. That was a good one. Gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater. And of course, I bought some dumb stuff too, you know.
Do you feel a lot of pressure introducing new material now, knowing that you've got to be, I mean, people have such high expectations of you. You constantly have to live up to your own image.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, is the next thing is going to be as funny. And you know, if you approach it with the right attitude, if you approach it like, eh, who cares, you'll undo it. And if you have a cheerful attitude about it, the audience can be, you know, they're not against me right now, so we all can sort of have a good time. If I looked like I was dying out there or worried, I think, or if I was embarrassed by the material, then it'd be bad. It's a pressure when I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, but when I'm out there doing it, I try to let all that pressure, you know, to ignore it.
Do you have any stage fright at all?
Maybe opening night, or if I haven't worked for a while. Just on the premise of, oh, will I leave this out, or will I, you know.
Is it hard for you to go on night after night after night? There never came a period or a time when you just didn't want to perform, you just wanted to...
Well, there's that, but it's not because I didn't like the audience. It's just because I've been up for 18 hours, and one night you're tired. But I've never walked out on the stage and started thinking about something else.
Would you say that the performances in your albums are sort of perfection performances?
What is funniest on a record is not necessarily what was funniest in a concert or in a nightclub. We listened, or Bill listened to things that were funny on a record. He listened for things that were funny on a record. Just a little different position or a little different point of view. I'm not saying they're the master performances, but even if I had a master performance on tape, which we do, I mean, we have like ones I consider to be great performances, you still have to edit them. And you still have to take out this bit because it's visual, and you still have to, you know, this laugh is too long. We took out laughs on the record because they were too long, and applause and things like that. You know, on the regular, you're sitting there, what's this?
Is your second album funnier than your first?
Well, the first album, and we intentionally made it this way, we put all my most famous material on it because we had no idea how the people were going to respond to the record or anything. So we thought, well, the only thing we can do is to put all the most obvious material on the record. And we did, and it worked. You know, I had Excuse Me and the grandmother's song and Let's Get Small. And this record, I think, is more of a record. The first record was like a good souvenir. This record is more exploratory, and you hear me when I think I was at my funniest. And that's a lot of ad-lib things on the record. You know, one side is recorded in a small place, 300 seats, and then the other side is 10,000 seats. It's an interesting record. You know, you hear the difference of performing for 300 people and then suddenly to go to 10,000. You only know what's funny for yourself. I mean, I don't know what's funny for so-and-so. I mean, that's what makes comedy work, is personalities. So you have to sort of be true to your own personality. And I can't dictate, you know, I say that's funny and that's not funny. Everything's funny or everything isn't funny. It depends on who's doing it. Well, there's a lot. I laugh at a lot of comedians. Some of the older guys, Jerry Lewis makes me laugh and made me laugh. And Jackie Gleason and Steve Allen, and worked with Milton Berle today, makes me laugh. Contemporary people, Lily Tomlin, Richard Pryor, Robert Klein, David Brenner, Steve Landisberg, Andy Kaufman. You know, I'm just like you. I think they're funny.
When you were developing your act and when you were developing your comic sensibility, who are the people you sort of...
When I was developing my act, my whole goal was to be unlike anybody else. You know, if that's been fulfilled or... You know, you're bound to have things creep in. I mean, personalities are made up of other people's personalities. You know, you select this from this guy and this from that guy and sort of put together yourself. Maybe my biggest influence was, Morris Walker, my friend in high school. I don't know.
When you were doing Let's Get Small, where did the idea for that come from?
I was sitting with some people at Aspen. I just said, what if there was a drug that made you small? And that was the origin of it. I wrote that idea down the next day. I worked on it.
Did you get a laugh then when you said that?
Not really. I said, what if the drug gets you small? And they sort of looked at me, and then but I knew in my mind it would work. So I wrote it down and just let it pass and all. And force it on anybody. But the joke, like, on the first record of giving my cat a bath. I gave my cat a bath. Cutting it down to the bare bones, I gave my cat a bath and the fur stuck to my tongue. But that joke, I was just sitting up at home one day and my cat was walking across the rug, you know, minding his own business. I had a pad of paper in my hand and it just like popped into my head like a vision, you know, and then I did it.
Right, and then you have, of course, this cat handcuff one, and also is...
That's on the other record, the new record.
And then also, so you have this big thing with your cat.
Well, our two jokes.
Do you have more stuff coming up on your cat?
No, I pretty much dropped that.
Do you have a dog?
I have to get one. You get two jokes on a dog.
I love animals. And there's something going on in Mexico right now. Some people think it's a sport. I happen to think it's cruelty to animals. I'm talking about, of course, cat juggling. They take the little kitties, 10, 12 weeks old, and they juggle them for money. La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Of course, the poor little kittens are going, meow, 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 meow. And there's something going on in Kansas right now that makes me sick. They take little laboratory mice, never hurt anybody, take them out to Hollywood and tell them they're going to be in pictures. Uh-oh, I'm getting happy feet! Whoa!
Do you have a master plan now? You and Bill, your manager?
Not anymore. No.
What happened?
Well, our master plan worked. So now I have to think of a new master plan. No, it's to make movies, to make funny movies. I'm kidding. That's always been the master plan.
Is there a comedian whose career you could, that you're trying to model yourself after, or you're making moves in that direction?
Well, I like Woody Allen's career. He was a successful stand-up comedian, a successful writer, and is a good writer. And now he sits in a penthouse and writes movies and produces them and everything. Yeah, he's slow. I don't think he's overworked. I mean, he hasn't overworked himself. He may overwork, but he hasn't. You know, he's not out trying to do everything like we are right now. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's a time to go out and do everything for me is right now. And then I can see myself a year down the line saying, okay, you know, let's take our time. And this is what we're doing right now. It's fun, but it's also hectic and scary.
Scary?
Yeah, making a bad picture, or you know, walking on TV and doing something bad because you didn't have the time to make it right.
So your schedule is really crowded now.
Yeah.
Getting this interview with you, I mean, this is, what, the second occasion now? Yeah. 10 minutes after 10 o'clock at night and you've been shooting all day.
Yeah. This is a particularly busy time because I'm doing a special, all right? 3 weeks ago, we started shooting it. 2 weeks we're shooting. Then I do 9 days at Universal Amphitheater, doing things in the daytime. Now that Universal Amphitheater ends, the very next day we're shooting again for 5 days, traveling around. Then I'm, It's Thursday. Friday we shoot on the special. Saturday in the morning I do a Barbara Walters interview. At night I have to do the Photoplay Awards. Sunday, it's theoretically a day off, although we have to edit on Sunday, the special. Monday is the Tonight Show, and then Tuesday I start a 2-week tour. So it's literally, that's what gets me more than anything, is you don't have an hour to yourself. You know, I'm doing it to myself because I know that in 3 weeks it'll be over. I'm not against working hard.
Are you on a high? You seem to be really pleased and so on.
Yeah,
on a high with
I'm very happy.
Did you ever...
Pardon me while I blow my brains out. No, I'm real happy.
Did you?
I mean, who can complain, you know?
Did you ever expect to be this big?
No.
Ever in your...
Maybe when I was 5 years old, you know, fantasy. But ever since I had a lot of rational mind, I didn't really think that it was even physically possible. You know, I played a... For a comedian to draw 30,000, 35,000 people.
And your album sold, how many copies were sold of your first album?
1.4 million so far.
And it's the largest selling comedy album.
I think so.
Oh, it's... I'm so mad at my mother. I don't know. She's 102 years old. She called me up the other day. She wanted to borrow $10 for some food. I said, hey, I work for a living. So I loan her the money. I have one of my secretaries take it down. And yesterday she calls me up and says she can't pay me back for a while. I said, what is this bullshit, huh? So I worked it out with her. I'm having her work on my transmission. And if she can't fix that, I'm having her move my barbells up to the attic. The whole thing.
Is it hard being with people from your past because you've become so enormously successful?
Not because I've become successful, just because you haven't seen them for 10 years and you really have nothing in common anymore. Some people I'm fine with, and other people it's difficult.
Do you find that since you've become so successful in the last few years that you've changed as a person, your attitude towards people has changed towards your past friends? You know, I mean...
See, I haven't basically changed at all from 10 years ago. I've always been a loner, and, you know, I'm not one for sad farewells. If anything is, if I don't see somebody anymore, it's not because I made it, you know, goodbye. It's because we don't have anything in common anymore. And a lot of people, I've, you know, been friends with Phil for 10, longer than that, for 13 or 14 years. We hate each other.
They seem very, very personable and very un-star-like. It's almost when you get up on the stage, you become a different person.
You know, that side of my life is taken care of. Everyone has a lunatic side. My side occurs on stage. So I don't have this need to be a lunatic off stage somehow. You know, it's that simple. But I'm not morose off stage, and it all depends on whom I'm with. If I'm with my old friends, I can be funny. If I'm with strangers, I can or can't be. And, you know, it's like everybody.
Do you ever feel that being a comedian is not sort of a legitimate job? I mean, it's not being a doctor or a lawyer or...
No. No, that never occurs to me.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'd have to be Jewish to have that kind of culture. What about your parents? How have they responded to your success?
Yeah, they were critical at first of what I was doing, and then...
What did they want you to do?
Finish college. You know, it's sort of critical of my act, you know, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that. And finally it clicked, and I was like, that's great, you know, this is great. I don't blame them. That, you know, I was doing something that's totally alien to their whole way of life. You know, it's what you'd expect. Not understand it, and then when it starts making it, you understand it.
How about the people in your neighborhood where you came from? Do you go back and visit them, or did you have that kind of an...
No, I didn't have that kind of... I didn't have those kind of friends. You know, I had one or two friends. I wasn't not social. I enjoy the intimate, secret jokes, like I said earlier, you know.
Being a loner, describe yourself as a loner. How has that affected you? I mean, now, I guess the gates of Hollywood are open to you, and the gates of L.A. are open to you. How does that affect your personal life?
I get by. In L.A., I can really get by. In New York, I can get by pretty good because people are a little more calm about seeing people they've seen on TV. When you get to small towns, it's absolutely insane. I mean, it's just... You can't do anything. You can't go outside into the hall because there's people waiting out there. I have people in Colorado knocking on my door, which I absolutely despise, because that's, you know, if you can't have privacy, you don't exist anymore. It hasn't really been that drastic. I learned to cope. I can remember when I was 10 years old, I learned to make my way through the crowds at Disneyland when I worked there. And it's the same thing now. Using that knowledge of working my way through crowds without anybody seeing me in a way.
Well, what happens when these people catch you or they find you? And what do they want from you? What do they say to you?
Well, that's the most embarrassing part. Finally, when someone tracks you down, they have nothing to say. Stand in front of you, you know, and they'll say, we saw you. You know, something like that. They go, yeah.
What would I say to Steve Martin?
That's a hard one.
You think you'd have a good conversation with him?
If I could stop laughing.
Now, what would you say to Steve Martin if you were here?
Hello.
How's it going? What are you doing for dinner tonight?
I give Steve Martin a big kiss.
I'm a wild American fox.
Hi, Steve. Are you married? Are you straight? Are you nuts?
If she doesn't want him that night, I'll take him.
I'd tell him to give me my girlfriend back, because she's madly in love with him.
Then what would happen?
I would just kind of try and get into his head where he got into mine instantly, which I have the ability to do, and just have a good conversation about what's ever coming down and laugh wholeheartedly. I'll just say, hey, Steve, what's going down, bro? Like that. Open right up and just move along like I'm skating now and just get into him.
Well, I think you're funny. Seem like a nice guy. I'd like the way you play the banjo. Let's smoke a reefer.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a visitor. I'm from Western Australia, so I don't know Steve.
Would it be a politician, I would tell him you should take out the skates and the bikes here. The old people are falling down. They knock down the old people and they break their hips. They break their hands and everything. That's the main thing. But he's not a politician. What could I say?
You know, people follow me and follow me into restaurants and things.
This does happen to you a lot.
Yeah. I just sat next to a guy on a plane, and he asked me about 150 questions. I mean, to the point of being ridiculous.
He knew you were Steve Martin?
Yeah. First thing I said when he sat down was, excuse me. Which immediately, you know, it's like, oh, no. And then finally at the end he says, you mind if I take your picture? I said, no, that's fine. He took out an 8mm camera with sound. Told me what bits to do.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't. So it's very difficult to get into it here on the plane.
Well, time has come to end the interview, Steve. You've finished your peanut butter sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you if you have any advice for younger comedians on their way up.
Yes. Always take your wallet on stage with you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been great. Really, I want to thank each and every one of you for coming by. So I guess I'll get rambling now, because I'm a rambling guy. I got a lot of important things to do. You kidding? A guy like me without important things to do? What time does TV go off? Well, I can't be doing this seriously. I've got a show to do a little later, so I've got to get rambling, and you've been great, and you know, you've got to laugh once a day, and that's why I feel proud to be up here as a semi-professional comedian, providing laughs in this way. Laugh once a day, because a day without sunshine is like night. I guess I'll get going now, and I would like to remind you of something the great Maharishi Guru taught me over 15 years ago. Maharishi was a close personal friend of mine, and I studied with him for 15 long, long, boring years. I didn't really learn that much the day I was leaving. The Maharishi said something to me I've never forgotten. Whenever there's a crowd of people like this, I always like to pass it on, because I'll bet a day hasn't gone by that I haven't thought of this particular thing. The Maharishi said, always, wait, it was never, always take a litter bag in your car. It doesn't take up much room. If it gets full, you can just toss it out. Thank you very much. Good night. Thank you.
This album was produced and edited by David Brandis, technical engineering by Rudy Hill.